Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Let's Clear the Air podcast, where we unpack policies, projects, market forces that are reshaping today's energy landscape. I'm Adam Murray with Stuart Salters and Brian Nix. And today we're going to be tackling one of the biggest friction points in U.S. energy and infrastructure, permitting. Why does it take so long to approve projects? What would it take to fix that without weakening environmental protection and community input? And so today, to help us break it down, we are joined by Chad Whiteman, Vice President of Environmental and Regulatory Affairs, U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Global Energy Institute, and a longtime Clean Air Act and federal permitting expert with expertise from both the EPA and the White House. Chad, thanks for joining us on Let's Clear the Air.
Great. Well, thanks for having me.
We always kind of get started with a question to Let's Clear the Air, although we didn't discuss this beforehand. So why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks again for the invitation to be here. My career has spanned a number of different topics in the energy and environmental space. Started out at EPA in the late 90s, working on cap and trade market-based programs for the electric power sector, and moved to a smaller trade association of equipment manufacturers that provide equipment for the power sector. And then on over to the White House, reviewing regulatory policy for White House folks. And I was a career official, but not official, but a career staffer in both the during the time of the Obama administration and the first Trump administration. So I ended up seeing a whole broad swath of policy, energy and natural resource policy across a whole bunch of different federal agencies. And then most recently over at the U.S. Chamber, where I work with chamber member companies at the Global Energy Institute, representing them on permitting reform, Clean Air Act, and a bunch of other really fun, interesting policy issues.
Thanks for your willingness to chat with us this afternoon. Like Adam mentioned, our hope is to get your take on a hot topic, permitting reform. But maybe if you don't mind setting the stage, what is permit reform? Why is it a big deal?
Yeah, it's a great question. Start out, you know, what is a permit and what are we even talking about? You know, permitting, when we talk about it in this context, at least for federal permitting, anytime you want to build something big, whether it be linear infrastructure projects like natural gas pipelines or electric transmission lines, or a road or a bridge, or you want to drop broadband cable or expand an airport, you want to build a launch pad for commercial space exploration. Just about any of these large projects, they'll have some type of federal nexus, whether that be crossing a federal water, way. Some of them get federal funding, like our highway, a lot of our highway projects, and others of them may cross over waters of the U.S., navigable waters, or they touch on federal lands. So if you actually meet any of those conditions, whether you have this federal nexus, whether you get funding or your project crosses a federal waterway, or they find out they're endangered species in the area of your project, you need some type of federal permit. And in many cases, you need a lot of them. And what, you know, most of these permitting processes are driven by statutes that were enacted in the 1970s. So a really long time ago. And a lot has changed since then, right? Trying to think, you know, 50 years ahead, 60 years ahead at what the economy would have needed is a really hard thing to do. And the permitting system, when it was designed then, really isn't able to keep up with where we are today, being able to meet society's demands for energy and moving people and data and goods.
Chad, I've just got a permit, a local one for a little garage I was building, and it took absolutely forever to get. So I can only imagine these large scale projects with federal permits take forever. So in your opinion, you know, what's actually broken in the system, and why does it take so long to get these permits? And, you know, specifically, is there a certain area where they get bogged down, specifically environmental, things like that?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I, you know, the process of permitting, and maybe I'll go back a little bit here. The permitting process, it takes about 4.5 years on average now for a permit from the federal government. And oftentimes, especially on the big projects, there's litigation that follows. So, and there was a group here in Washington, the Breakthrough Institute, that put out a report not long ago that looked at a couple of hundred projects that were litigated, and they found it took about 4.5 years to get through litigation. So if it takes 4.5 years to get your permit, and then after that, you have another 4+ years just to get through the litigation, you're talking 8 years before you have any certainty whether you can build or not and whether your project's going to be viable. So when we're talking about investments that we want to make today in our economy, you know, bringing on new electric transmission to support reshoring manufacturing or to grow out our AI and data centers, or just to provide affordable, reliable, more energy, it takes, you know, massive investments over long periods of time. And in order to make those investments, to keep people at the table, the investors, you need to have certainty. And having an 8-year process isn't certainty. So that's really kind of one of the breaking points for permitting and why we're calling on the need for permitting reform. And I'll go on a little bit further to say, the federal government made some updates in 2020 in the first Trump administration to help streamline and provide a little bit more certainty to that process and to make it go a little bit faster. But then more recently, there have been a couple of Supreme Court cases that have really shifted it, and they have really tried to ramp it up. But in the interim, we had the prior administration that sort of reverted back to where it was before the first Trump administration. And not only that, they added additional requirements. So there's a lot of uncertainty in this process if we have things shifting back and forth. And from the regulatory process, which drives a lot of the permitting, that just creates a lot of uncertainty. So what we've been calling for is for Congress to do something. And that's really, you know, to have durability in this process. When we talk about regulatory reform, we're talking about updating this process so that, it's predictable, it's efficient, and it's transparent. And we can, you know, continue to do things here in the U.S., protecting the environment, but maybe build a little bit faster.
Eight years in the United States is potentially two presidential terms, right? Like you mentioned, two totally opposing points of views. I'm curious, how does the U.S. compare to other countries that are growing or building infrastructure at sort of the level we are?
Yeah, well, you don't have to look too far to see who one of our main competitors is, you know, one of the other economic powers out there, China. You know, China built the equivalent of our grid in 4 years, right? That's a massive amount of infrastructure, wires and generation and everything else that goes with it that they put up in a really short period of time. So, we're not trying to be China because we're not going to be able to, you know, we have different laws here and we have a, you know, different process, and we want to protect the environment and make sure that, you know, communities and stuff are protected and they need to be involved in this process. But we want to be able to speed up the process and make it more efficient so that we can still make these investments. So, you know, there are other countries. Australia is another one that, at least in the mining sector, they have a much more streamlined, same with Canada, mining permitting process. In different countries around the world have passed permitting reform to help speed up project areas that they found important to them. In Europe, a lot of it has been a renewable energy project. So what we're trying to do here in the U.S. is to implement comprehensive permitting reform that's not just one sector getting a carve out. It's sort of broad updates to these 50, 60-year-old statutes to help bring them up, modernize them so they can help our economy keep up with what the demands of the public and the opportunities that are out there.
Now, it is interesting to see the disparity. I mean, I guess, who is it? Somebody was saying that, some of the European countries were having challenges doing permitting reform, but whenever Russia invaded Ukraine and they needed their natural gas, they built those floating LNG storage facilities pretty quickly. So we don't want to be motivated by those types of things. So I think kind of getting stuff in statute and streamlining the process, you know, is a good path to go down as opposed to just reacting to emergencies.
That's right. And you know, this is on a little side topic, but, energy security is national security. And it's one reason why we want to get the permitting process up and going and running here so that we can continue to develop and use our natural resources. And we don't want, you know, a permitting process that is either redundant or too long or too burdensome or restrictive to slow that down.
So we heard about Brian's garage and the time it took to get his permit. What other examples, Chad? I know the chamber is, you guys represent a lot of sectors of the economy. I mean, what other examples have the chamber or the Global Energy Institute seen when it comes to delays and opportunities lost because of permits?
Yeah, there are a lot of examples out there. One I'll bring up is a bridge project, the Bayonne Bridge that connects New York and New Jersey. This is a bridge that they wanted to take out the old bridge and raise the new bridge up 60 feet, right? Just so they could get larger container ships into the bay and supply that region. And it took 5 years or 10 years to get the permit. It cost $5 million. They had to go to something like 19 different federal, state, and local agencies to get permits, right? Just to raise a bridge 60 feet. Now, there are a ton of examples like that across the board. There are a number of electric transmission line projects that have taken a decade or more just to get the permitting. And in some cases, you know, they're crossing a small portion of a federal forest land or some other federal land, and they get caught up in litigation, and that litigation just drags on until finally, they either, pull back the project because the costs have gotten so high because of inflation and other issues, or they move forward, but extremely delayed. So, you know, across the board, there are a ton of examples out there. You know, SunZia, the Cardinal Hickory electric transmission lines are two other examples. You know, they're bridge projects, they're, airport projects that, just try and expand airports and add another runway, are just taking way too long to get the permit. So in a, in an economy where we're at now, where in particular with the race for AI, it's a race for electrons, right? And molecules. And we have a lot of them here in the U.S. We're blessed with a lot of those natural resources. But the challenge is getting it out of the ground and getting it turned and converted into energy that we can use to power our economy. And permitting is sometimes we run into those, those bottlenecks, and trying to unlock that so that we can still protect the environment in communities, but yet move that process forward faster is really where we're trying to go.
Yeah, what's crazy to me is just imagining all of the people, the places, the things you have to do for this. Not like there's a handbook or a checklist of permits that you have to check off. So you're probably discovering a lot of those as you're going on with these projects. So you had shared, obviously you've got some old statutes, some causing some issues with the permitting. And you talked about kind of being a broadband solution, not just industry specific, which I imagine is a lot more challenging. So what are some of the solutions, like specific ones that you guys are advocating for?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'll start at the top, at the highest level. The chamber has been calling for comprehensive bipartisan permitting reform that includes three components. And these are broad components, and I can talk about some of the bills as well, the specifics of those. But from the highest level, what we want to see is a bipartisan comprehensive bill, right, that addresses all these different sectors, not just a carve out for one or two sectors, right? And we want something that's efficient, right? And I mentioned before, 4.5 years to get the permit, 8 years for litigation. That's not an efficient process, right? So the timeline of the project really needs to be reduced. And, there was some legislation passed to set goals for 2 years and 1 year in the Fiscal Responsibility Act of 2023. But the legislation maybe didn't have as much teeth, or maybe it was the implementation. So something that really could kind of stick on that would be really helpful. More on the efficiency side, part of it is, the project permits that agencies put together on average for these big projects are as much as 1,700 pages long, right? So, narrowing down what the agencies look at so that they're looking at the most important aspects of the project, the direct impacts, is really important. And so one of the ways that proposed legislation is trying to get at this is to adopt or to put into law the seven counties court decision, the Supreme Court decision, right? And part of what the seven counties court decision is all about is saying, look, federal agency XYZ, you just need to focus on the direct impacts of the project in time and space and not far and out, you know, the indirect effects that are far distant, both in time and space from the actual project. That's something that provisions were included in the Speed Act, which passed out of the House last December. It came up through the House Natural Resources Committee, and Representative Westerman was the lead on that, the chair of that committee. So that's like efficiency. The second thing that we are calling for is predictability, and predictability in particular for on the litigation side, right? So if you go into the litigation process, if you get in, you get your permit, it'd be nice to know that if you're going to get sued, that litigation is brought earlier, right? So that you know the timeline. It's not this open-ended timeline where you're getting sued and you get resued again. That can last 4 or more years. So one of the things that has been proposed in legislation and passed out of the Speed Act as well is moving up the statute of limitations. Well, from 6 years to something much less, to like 150 days. And what that would mean is, right now, if you get a federal permit, that's an agency final action, and then citizen groups can sue. Right. And if they sue, they can wait until, year 5, month 11, the last day and file a suit. And that's not helpful. Right. That's not a predictable way to get a permit and build stuff. So getting the statute of limitations shortened up so that litigation that comes is brought forward more quickly is a big part of it. Another part of this type of legislation that we think is a good idea in the judicial reform area is the types of remedies that a court can issue after they make a decision. So if you get sued and you lose the lawsuit, what this legislation would say is you can't vacate the permit. So you can't make the project sponsor or the agency go back to square one and restart the whole permit. It says, go back and address the issue that was brought up in the court that was a problem, remand the permit back to the agency, have them address that specific issue that was raised by the litigant, and then bring that back, the permit back. And then the legislation would set a timeline for when the agency has to respond to that court remand. So it starts like just tightening up some of this litigation process so that the project sponsors can get through the litigation more quickly, because ultimately the costs build up, they skyrocket, right? When the longer you have to wait, you have to renegotiate labor contracts, fuel costs may have changed, all kinds of conditions can change with the actual project. So that's predictability. And there are a lot more components of these too. I'll just name in a few. And the third one is transparency. And that's a really important one. And that means, hey, if you play tennis and you volley the ball across the court, you can see it's in the other guy's court, right? And then the other guy volleys it back, or whomever it is, right? And so if you're a project sponsor, you volley the permit over, the federal agency, they take the information and they're like, okay, here's what we volley back. Here's what else we need. Now the ball's in your court. So knowing where the ball is for the project sponsor, but not only that, but for the public. So we have been really big supporters of, digitizing the permitting process, because that helps with sharing that information, getting it out to the public, making it more accessible. And the chamber actually had negotiated a deal with NRDC some time ago and helped create FPSC, the Permitting Council, which has the permitting dashboard, right? And that was a big part of it, was project transparency, because now we have this dashboard. It says, here are all the projects that are being reviewed by agency XYZ. And here are the milestones of the project and where they are with the agency, or where the agency is in that process. So transparency is a big, important part of this as well. And then the final piece I'll mention is community engagement and, having meaningful engagement with communities. They want to build and be good neighbors to their neighbors and be helpful and good in their community. So they want to make sure the community has a voice and is engaged and knows what's going on and has the ability to participate. So those four things are kind of what we push for at a higher level, efficiency, predictability, transparency, and meaningful community engagement. And then from there, we can flow into a whole bunch of other, legislative policies that we think are good ideas.
Considering that goes across a variety of industries, pretty much every industry, I imagine, has some contact with permitting. How do you guys balance that out? I mean, the transparency, seems like it would be a relatively simple solution, the dashboard, but how do you ensure that there is transparency? How do you ensure that there's environmental protection? I mean, what sort of steps are being taken or discussed to balance those?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll take the last part of it first. And on the environmental side, one of the things we hear is, the business community wants to just get rid of all the environmental requirements, right? And remove all the environmental protections. And that's not the case. We want to speed it up, right? We want to make sure that we get a decision, yes or no, more quickly and move through this process. So, the action statutes like the Clean Air Act and, there are dozens literally of environmental statutes that are out there. All of these passed after NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. The National Environmental Policy Act came out in 1970, and they hadn't at that time envisioned the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act and Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, Endangered Species Act, and the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and just on and on, right? Like all of these permitting statutes that have come out. And so what we're trying to do is, for NEPA in particular, is make this process better and make sure that the decisions can happen more quickly, and then the action statutes are going to still be in place to protect the land, air, and water, which is really important. And the great news about it is we have some of the cleanest air, land, and water in the world, right? So let's build here in the U.S. where we can do it with the backdrop of all these laws that protect our communities, that protect our land and our water and our air. So it's just one more incentive to build here in the U.S. and one more incentive to get the permitting done so that we can build the infrastructure of the future and provide the benefits that infrastructure can bring to our communities and our families.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Sorry. I know we're talking about solutions, but I want to go back to the problems. When you were talking, especially when you're talking about SunZia, some of these big, high voltage power line projects that have been delayed because of permitting, like as you think about what our country's facing with this huge electric demand, I guess huge energy demand, but electricity mainly when you think about the data centers and kind of the build out of data centers, like, I don't know, Adam, I think you and I may have been talking about this, Brian, you and I may have been talking about this, but when you think about what those data centers need when they don't have the electricity from the utility, like they need turbines, right? Or they need power generating equipment, which we also need from a, a gas processing standpoint. And so just the ripple effects that can happen because you've got this just burdensome permitting process is just, it's just mind boggling. And it just seems like we should probably fix this because all these impacts downstream or ancillary or whatever just cause a lot of problems. And so it's just kind of, I don't know, it just seems like there'd be enough momentum to get this done. But I guess that'll kind of lead me into my question is there has been some stuff done. You've talked about other stuff that needs to get done, but what has been done? You mentioned FIPSI, the dashboard. I know there's the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, the One Big Beautiful Bill. Like there was kind of nipping around the edges of the problem with that legislation. I mean, were there wins in those pieces of legislation or what has been done in the past to kind of help solve the problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there have been some wins. They've been smaller. And not the sort of comprehensive type that we're calling on Congress to get done today. The Surface Transportation Reauthorization Bills, which, are due every 5 years, are a good example of what can get done. You know, almost in every one of those bills, Safety Lou, MAP 21, FAST 41, like all of these bills have included certain types of permitting reforms in them for, but specific to the transportation sector, right? Specific to the Department of Transportation and the modal agencies that are run out of DOT. So what we really want to see is like the more comprehensive reforms, and not just to the National Environmental Policy Act, but a lot of these other statutes that could, you know, could be modernized and updated. So, you know, the Fiscal Responsibility Act of 2023, I'll just talk about that one just for a minute, and maybe the One Big Beautiful Bill provisions. But the Fiscal Responsibility Act provisions, it included a lot of what was in one federal decision. And this was a bill that was being promoted by Representative Garrett Graves from Louisiana. And he worked with Democrats at the time to get this in. And it included some of the really fundamental, important types of reforms to the permitting process. And I'll just name three of them. One was the timeline, the shot clock provisions. And it essentially said for projects that require the highest level of analysis or the environmental impact statement, we call it a, you know, permit for shorthand. For those types of projects, they set the deadline for an agency at 2 years. So once they start the permitting process, they're supposed to be done and clocked out after 2 years. And then for the level of project, more medium-sized projects that, that require less analysis, the environmental assessment type projects, they're supposed to get the project, the sponsors are supposed to get their permit after a year, right? So they set the shot clocks. The challenge with the legislation is it includes the ability for agencies to get out of it. If they just ask for an extension internally, they can get sort of continued extensions. But the goal is good, right? We like the goal, we like the idea, and you know, it's helpful for agencies to tighten this down from 4.5 years down to 2. Right? Or one if the project's a little bit smaller. One of the other areas is, well, and I mentioned before, 1,700 pages to get some of these big projects permits done. Excuse me, they set the page limit way down to, I believe it's 150 pages or maybe 200 for an EIS and either 50 or 100 pages for an EA. So, you know, significantly reduce the page count. And, you know, those are a couple of the provisions that are in that bill. The other one, the third one I'll mention is the interagency coordination one. So as you can imagine, when you have these bigger projects, if you have, you're crossing a federal waterway and then you have an endangered species and then you throw on top of it, you know, a tribal heritage site, then you pull in multiple agencies, right? And so what has sometimes been done is each agency will move forward with their own permitting process for that one project. And it just creates a really complicated flow chart of steps that, you know, a project sponsor has to navigate. So what this Fiscal Responsibility Act bill did is it said, no, if there's more than one project involved, let's just have one lead agency lead it. The participating agencies or cooperating agencies, as they're called, can join in that process. But the idea is let's do one document and then let's consolidate the timeline so that's coordinated when we're doing public meetings and all that kind of stuff. So that's the Fiscal Responsibility Act provisions. Again, important provisions, but still not sort of the comprehensive what we're looking for. More recently, in the One Big Beautiful Bill, again, another budget, federal budget bill, this one basically said that if a project sponsor wants to, they can go to the White House through the Council of Environmental Quality and they can pay for the permitting process, right? They can pay the federal agency. I believe it's 125% of the estimated cost of getting the federal agency to do the permit. The federal agency still runs it, right? They're just funding it. The federal agency still has control of the whole process. It just allows the project sponsor to come in and provide that funding. This is something that's been going on for quite a bit for some time, in particular Army Corps of Engineers and others. They've been doing this for a while. And then the One Big Beautiful Bill just put it in law. So it it made it you know, easier to access. And so there were a couple of the bills that besides all the transportation bills that have touched on NEPA, that have helped implement reforms that are important and are keeping the ball moving forward?
Yeah. So, Chad, it sounds like there's a lot of small gains and small efforts as part of these larger bills. I mean, do you see that as kind of the most realistic way that this is going to change, just small incremental pieces over time? Or do you think a more effective approach would be, you know, a large comprehensive bill that's focused on permit reform?
Yeah, we see an opportunity now like we haven't ever seen before to get a comprehensive bill passed. You don't have to go very far to hear both Republicans and Democrats saying, look, we need to update this permitting process. So, it's changed so much now to the point like every sector is talking about it. In the last year or so, there have been five or six reports that I've read that many of them are sector specific, and they talk about the costs of delay due to permitting to their sector and what that means for the economy. And I'll start out, just maybe highlight the, there was a McKinsey report that came out not long ago, and it estimated that there's $1.5 trillion worth of investment currently going through permitting. The National Association of Manufacturers came out with an estimate that something like $7 to $9 billion in manufacturing is being delayed due to permitting. National Mining Association came out with similar, estimates. The Wireless Trade Association, representing technology manufacturers, similar reports. So, you can go down the line, and each the Business Roundtable had one as well. All these sectors have come out and said, look, we all need to build. We want to build our communities. We want to provide better services for customers. The businesses are saying that, and so they're. Unlike any other time in the last, 50 years, have we seen a call from all sides calling for permitting reform. You go back, even 20 years ago, and it was more one-sided because a lot of the, projects were being blocked by special interest groups, in particular environmental groups, it's well documented, to oppose fossil energy projects. And that's really changed because now we have a lot of fossil energy projects we need to build. We have a lot of renewable energy projects we need to build. And then everything in between that's non-energy, from transportation to broadband to water quality to everything else. And I think everyone realizes that if we're still stuck in a permitting process, still stuck in the 1970s, we love the bell bottoms and we love the cassette tapes, but it's time to move forward, right? And let's modernize the permitting process so it can meet the challenges of today.
Well, before we try and wrap things up, we always do another standardized question, and I'll get to that in a moment. But where can listeners go to get more information, get more involved? Where can they go find out more on permitting stuff that's happening?
That's a great question, and I'll direct you right to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So I'm leading the chamber's coalition called Permit America to Build, and if you look it up online, we have a ton of resources that talk about things that are happening in Congress, and it talk about the message from all these different sectors about the need for updates to permitting. GPA Midstream and others signed on to a ton of our letters, including one most recent letter that we issued in February to all of Congress, calling on them to get comprehensive permitting reform done. And what's great about this letter is we pulled in 600 different organizations, right? Over 400 state and local chambers of commerce from every corner of the U.S., all 50 states, and even Guam. And we pulled in more than 150 national trade associations. So representing every sector of the economy. So if that's not a message that we need to get something done, I'm not sure what there is. It really represents, the economy and a broad set of voices that, look, let's cut the red tape and let's make this permitting process better. So the Chambers Permit America to Build a coalition or a webpage is a great place to go. And one other thing I want to mention, just on the status of where things are on the Hill, one reason why we've been calling and issuing these letters, the House did a lot of work, the House of Representatives, in the end of last year, and passed a number of great bills. They're comprehensive. Some of them are more statute specific. but they get at a lot of these policies that we've been talking about for some time. And so now the ball has been sort of passed on to the Senate, and the Senate has been working hard. The two committees in the Senate have been really working at it, both Democrats and Republicans, to get something together. They've been collaborating with the White House, and we're waiting on them to announce a deal. And from all we've heard and from talking to them and talking to everybody else who's talking to them, they are working on a comprehensive deal that would address so many of these permitting challenges. So join with us in the Permit America to Build process and this coalition. It's great to have partners like GPA Midstream to saddle up with us to keep urging Congress to get this done, because there's no better opportunity than now, just with all the voices calling for this and the momentum that we've built up so far.
Well, that sounds like a perfect segue to our last question. So you're back on the show 3 years from now, and you're happy. What has gone on over the past 3 years that has allowed for a successful permitting system, or what have policymakers done over the next 12 to 18 months that gets you feeling happy personally?
Wow. That gets me excited thinking about the opportunities, right? If we pass a comprehensive bipartisan permitting reform bill, it'll be monumental. The Chamber and many other organizations have been calling for this for literally decades, but the momentum has really accelerated. So if they can pass that bill, and we'll start to see federal agencies implementing that bill through regulations, getting those regulations out and start rolling out that process that, you know, brings on predictability, efficiency, transparency, and meaningful community engagement, we'll be jumping up and down and celebrating. So yeah, I think if they get that bill done, then the job will roll over to the federal agencies for them to implement it. And we'll be behind them 100% to get this done, so businesses can build and invest and get that $1.5 trillion that's currently going through permitting out of the pipeline and into our communities.
Awesome. Let's hope that we'll have our collective fingers crossed.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us, definitely.
Well, it's great to be with you guys. Thanks so much for having me on, and great questions and really important topic to discuss so we can really boost our economy and bring on the infrastructure of the future.
Perfect. And to all our listeners, thank you for joining. We will catch you on the next Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast.